Genesis chapter 3. Been brought to a home of a widow, and I want us to take a look at about five homes. I'll not say too much, but I want us to speak a little on five homes. Now, chapter 3 and verse 6. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Now turn over, please, to chapter 16 of Genesis. I think it's chapter 16. Verse 2, and Sarah said unto Abraham, Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may also obtain children by her. And Abraham hearkened to the voice of Sarah. Now slip over to the book of Job, please. Verse 9. Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And all this did not Job sin with his lips. Now the first book of Samuel, please, that's going backwards. First book of Samuel, chapter 25. This is Abigail, verse 18. And Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed and 5 measures of parched corn and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and led them upon asses. Now I want you to notice the latter part of the next verse. And she said unto her servants, Go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she told not her husband Nabal. Now, the New Testament for a reading, please. The book of the Acts. The book of the Acts, chapter 5. The book of the Acts, chapter 5. Verse 1. But a certain man named Ananias and Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. That will do for our reading. I would like us just to pay a visit to five homes that I want us to think about tonight. I don't think I often speak on home life in a public meeting, because most of us who are married know that we're severely tested on anything that we give out in public. And the home is one place that proves us in our weakest at times. Now, the point there, the amen's coming now. The point that I want us to see is this, and I want us to think about it very thoughtfully if we can, that there's nothing so blessed and so wonderful as harmony in the home. A disturbed home and a couple who are married that are not happily together is a strange sight and not at all in the will of God. So we want to take a look at harmony in the home. And then we want to see that harmony in the home cannot always be right. That'll be a surprise to some of you. And we see where homes were not in harmony and yet were the better of not being so. Now don't be putting me out of the meeting because I've said such a thing. Now will you take a look at the first home that we had to think about? Did you ever think of what must have been like for Eve to look at her husband? No grey hairs, no spectacles on him, no dentures in his mouth, not a wrinkle on his face, as fresh from the hand of God as a man could be. My, says somebody, that's a model husband. What a beauty to have. But not the like of him on the face of the earth. Then you take a look at his partner. What a beautiful lady she must have been. Now, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that. I would judge that when Eve came from the fingers of God, that she was a masterpiece, just as her husband was. two beautiful subjects in that home. Did you ever think of the home they were in? No shopping to do, no groceries to buy, no clothes to obtain, nothing to provide. My, such a home. No rent to pay, no rich to think about, not even the single invader of any sort. And then says somebody, sure it must have been very monotonous. Oh, they weren't just left in the Garden of Eden to sit and look at each other. For they had the garden to keep, and they had to maintain it in an exercise. God seen to it that their physical needs were met, so that they had exercise as well as ample provision to enjoy. What a beautiful home. What a beautiful home. And you know, there's no question about the relationship. You know, some men, when they make mistakes, or some people, when they break down, they say, well, you know, he got the wrong partner. That's what was ruined him, you know. He'd have been all right, you know, if he'd have got the right wife. Well, you see, Adam got the right wife. There wasn't a question about that. And he got her from the Lord. So you can't argue with that. So that was an ideal home, with an ideal husband, with a wife provided by the Almighty, and not even a shadow of a doubt about the choice or anything like that. Well, says somebody, what a beautiful place. Was it a pity it was ever spoiled? Wasn't it? Now we have to face it. What I want us to think about is this. They had the word of God, and not to be obeyed. And they were told the penalty of disobedience. Now both of them had it from God. Now I don't say that Eve got it directly, but she at least knew it. You know that when she's speaking to the serpent, that she knew it. And she had an understanding of it. And she understood the warning that God gave her. And it says she took of the fruit. Now this is the bit I want us to think about. And she gave also to her husband with her. Now here's harmony. Harmony in doing wrong. Harmony in doing wrong. Two, actually agreeing to disobey God. I wonder would that be a message to anybody's heart tonight in this hall. It'd be an awful thing for a man and his wife to be disobedient to God and to be agreed about it. Now I know that the scholars, these intelligent men that you'd hear speaking at times, they would try to explain why Adam took it and was to please his wife, or possibly why Eve gave it to him. She didn't want her to have advancement over him and all this kind of talk. You may say what you like, but the point in the passage is clearly this, that they both knew they were doing wrong, but they stood together in the wrong. Now can you weigh that up? Is it not gravely possible that in any good home even, that there could be disobedience to the word of God, and they both agree in doing it? That wouldn't make it any better, and that wouldn't be easy to explain. And one more point, and then I want to just pass that. I'll be going quickly. Don't worry, I can put things through quickly. The next thing I want you to see is this, that has sad consequences. Oh, now we're all the subjects of it. Talk about the wrinkles now, you can do what you like, but you can find out the deaths and the sorrows and the griefs and the groans and the pains and all the different agonies all coming out, all stemming from that first harmonious act. Mind you, were in harmony with it. What was wrong? And the fact that the two of them agreed on it didn't make it right. Now, can you learn anything there? Do it your best, my dear brother. So often we find brethren doing wrong and the wife supporting them. So often we find a woman doing wrong and her husband supporting her. Don't be silly now. Don't let us be foolish. It's good enough to have harmony in the home, but if harmony's in doing wrong, it's grieving to the Lord. And it's a disaster we cannot fail to see. I'm going to take you to the next home now. That's quick. And that is to the home of Abraham. Come on now, you will agree that as far as the world was concerned in his day, possibly the home of Abraham was the greatest home in the world at that time. I'm talking big, but I think I'm right in saying that. Now I know Shem was alive, and his home likely was good too, for Shem, as you know, had lived much longer than we normally think when we're reading through our Bible. In fact, he outlived Abraham, of whom I'm just speaking. But at the same time, as far as we're concerned, the home that knew God most, and where the God of glory had appeared to Abraham, and where he and his wife had been so wonderfully directed by God, and they could have been singing, "Guide us, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrims through this weary land." She had shared the hardships with him, and she had picked up her tent, as it were, and forfeited her home life in the city of Ur of the Chaldees, or wherever he lived, and she had gone out on her pilgrimage, and she's going to walk the path of faith in company with Earth's best man, a man who knew God in an intimate way. But you see, faith, as you all know, and we don't need to talk too much about it, for we all have failed with it. It's very testing sometimes. And she just felt as if all those promises made to Abraham, that he hadn't just fully understood them. That while he was to be the father of many nations, and he was to be the wonderful head of a great people, that possibly it was just him that was to be involved in it, and not her, not his wife. And so she devises this idea, well, I'll give him Hagar to be his second wife, or whatever word you like to use. Or his concubine, or whatever word you like to use. And there was it done. And Abraham agreed with her. Agreed with her. Oh, harmony in the home, all right. Hey, listen to her, dear sister. Harmony in the home, all right, but harmony in doing wrong. Harmony in doing wrong. Both agreeing, but agreeing to do what God never intended to be done. Now, you know, it worked. I suppose of all the problems we have in life, is this, that many things that we do that are not right, they apparently succeed. This is a problem that I have never been able to solve. Things that I know are done wrong, and yet they seem to succeed. And of course, the child was born, and Ishmael was brought into the world. And you know all about that, without me going into it in detail. The harmony in that home, and the obedience that they had one of the other, and the agreement that they had. You can see it now. It led to the bringing into the world of that great trouble that is still troubling Israel to the present day. Possibly the Arabs and all that conflict, as you know, and the West Bank and one thing or another. These men would explain it all to you. If they were doing it, I wouldn't be able. But that all is coming out of this. Oh, could we learn tonight the far-reaching consequences of a wrong step, of a wrong plan. And what I want us to know about it, and what I want us to think about is this, they were both agreed about it, but agreement didn't make it right. Can you follow that, Levi? Now we come to a third home, and that is to the home of Job. Come on, dear sister, I think I could water your teeth for a good husband, couldn't I? He's a millionaire, you know. I mean, they're not too plentiful. Well, they're a fair more of them now than they used to be, but your chances of getting one of mine, being married to one, would be very slim in this world. We don't want that anyhow. Mind you, a millionaire. Oh, he's no fool now. And not only a millionaire, but a spiritual millionaire. You know, that's a big thing to get. Oh, you get a big wealthy man, all right, he'd be as hard as nails and as little of God about him. But a man that fears God above men. Come on now, dear sister, would you not agree that that was the greatest honor that his wife could enjoy? Wasn't it? There she is. Oh, she doesn't know what she's worth. And he doesn't know what he's worth. And there they are, apparently in absolute prosperity. A most wonderful home that must have been. I had servants galore, and they had all the attention they needed, and they had everything we might say that earth could wish for. And you know, many a time, my dear sister, I wouldn't like to be hard with you, dear sister, but many a time she imagines that if I could get a good, spiritual, God-fearing husband, I would have a life free from trouble. You know, I was going to tell you something. You likely never made a bigger mistake. Mind you, that is solemn. For those who are going to be useful for God, and those who have served God until their little bodies are worn out, remember they have all a tale to tell of dealings and heavy trials and troubles that they could enlarge upon, and we could all speak about them. And thank God not too many know about them, but still, every man of God that has been any use, that we have known, they have gone through the mill. And while dear Mrs. Job, if you let me call her that, might have had bright and blessed hopes as she got married to Job, and as she saw the wonderful prosperity that had attended to all his doings, and noticed his devotion to God and his sacrifices on the altars and his communion with God, she must have said, this is the dearest to heaven upon earth. And then all of a sudden, there you know too well, without me dwelling on it, the whole scene, the whole bright picture collapsed in her face. And what's happened? Now, what can you think about it? She's looking out through the door. She sees a heap of ashes and the millionaire sitting scraping himself with a piece of death. The millionaire scraping himself with a piece of death. Oh, she says, that's my husband. That's not the man I married. He's not looking the way I had him on the marriage day. He's not the boy that I thought I was going to live with. He's not the wealthy man that I thought. Look at him there. Oh, wasn't he an awful sight? And then she comes and she puts into his ear, curse God and die. And look, I'd rather see your body and going to the grave than see it so deformed and so troubled with these boils and you scraping yourself. I'll just as leave see you dead. Now listen, friend. Harmony in the home up to that big crisis came, and now the harmony has come to an end. Now wasn't it well Job didn't do what Abraham did and what Adam did? Didn't listen to his wife. Was prepared to differ with the one that he loved dearly. And he said, maybe you wouldn't like it too well said to you, but now he said it as gently as he could. He says, you're speaking like one of the silly women, one of the foolish women. Telling his wife, now you're not as wise as I thought you were. You're not talking sense. Well, if God has given it, he has a right to take it away. And we're going to be, if he in trial, he's going to be the same to us as if he were in prosperity. Dear soul, now can you get a little thought in the back of my message is this. Here's disharmony in the home, but it's all right. Now what I would want to say to you, dear sister, you watch that you're not putting insinuations into your husband that are wrong. Now be telling him to leave the meeting. Don't you be troubling yourself. You have no time for that. Maybe telling him to do something else. And maybe telling him to clear out of Northern Ireland altogether. This wee corner is yours. It's a new use of a place. You better get away from it. Or maybe suggesting something else. Pouring into his ear something. And you're just doing that because of the circumstances that you didn't expect have come your way. Now my answer to you, dear sister, is this. Be careful what you say. And my answer to dear brethren, and you know I don't want you to think that I'm a wiseacre in all these matters, but be careful that you don't always obey your wife if she's telling you to do something that's wrong. Now you don't like me saying that, but maybe you ponder that over. For you know behind every good man, there's a good woman usually. They used to say that. That's the way they used to get on. And you needn't let me put that the reverse gear now. You wouldn't want me to turn that into reverse, would you? That all good poor men are the outcome of poor women. I wouldn't like to say that. But I do want you to think now, be careful, dear soul. Now, dear sister, I don't want you to think that I'm here giving you a lecture. I want you to remember this, that you could be putting thoughts into your husband's head that are not right. And don't be doing that. And I would say to you, dear men, don't always listen to what your wife tells you to do. If it's wrong, don't listen to it. I know you never heard that like they ministered before, but it'll be worthwhile weighing that up in light of the judgment seat. We come to another home. Now, this wasn't a millionaire, but Mindy was fairly well to do. And it was the happiest time in the year. It was the sheep shearing. And Naboth was, he was shearing the sheep. And Abigail, his wife, was there too. Now I know I could preach a good bit as to why David could make claims upon him and he could ask him for a provision for his army because that's the way that they were supported. Now the answer to David's claim is a very simple one. For had it not been for men like David, the Philistines would have taken all that this man owned and he would have no sheep to shear. So actually when David was asking him for some supplies, he was simply looking for the wages for the army that had protected his crop and had protected his sheep, and therefore Abigail and her husband owed David a debt in that respect. But you know the way Abigail, the way Naboth this man acted toward David's man. Oh, he's just money one runs away from his master. And should I take my this and my that and my something else? And he's all selfishness and so on. And the wife hears him. Now listen to me. The wife hears him, and she knows that's not right. And she suspects that's not going to end right. We're going to be in trouble about this. And you know that she saddled the asses and the animals, and she laid it, she put the cargo up on the top of them, or she laden them with all these good things, and she went out to David. Now, did you notice the little expression? I read it deliberately. She told not her husband. Did you catch that now? Maybe you're not noticing these things in your Bible. She told not her husband. She let him go on with his drinking and with his lazing about and his jolly good time. She let him go on with that. And she let him carry on as he liked. And she did what was right. But she didn't tell her husband that she was doing it. Those are somebody that man's going to get up and tell us that wives can disobey their husbands and they can do as they like. No, we're never taught that. And never will. The Bible won't allow me. And we just better bow to the Bible and leave it to settle that matter. But there are times now. This is one of the things, dear sister, you might have to ponder. May come circumstances in your life when you'll have to take a stand against your husband. And it's not easy. It's not easy. I've known, I can never forget one home I went to in County Antrim. I've talked about it for years now. And the lady, I didn't know her at all, of course, but she asked me into the house. She says, you know, come on in. And I said, did you ever hear the gospel? Oh, yes. She says, I'm saved. And she says, in fact, all our family are saved, as far as I know. And the strangest thing about our family is this, that like myself, we never were in a gospel meeting until after we were saved. Did you hear that, brother? God can save, you know. And he did it on this occasion. Anyhow, the one thing she did tell me was that stuck in me. She says, you know, it came to the night when I decided to be baptized. And I knew my husband was against it. And she says, he and I had, we had gone on very well. He brought home his pay packet, you know, this is all different to what you're used to checks now, but his pay packet, and he just handed it to me and let me handle the money for the home. And he'd been exceedingly kind to me. And this is what he said to me when I was going out to be baptized. Mind, it was sad to her heart. I'd rather see your coffin going out. I see you going out to get baptized. But she says, I went on. Mind you, that's costly. There's a sister doing the will of God, even though it was very much opposed by her partner in life. You see, disharmony, now listen carefully, can be right when one is taking a stand and doing what's right against the other. Now you see the way I balance that. That is, in Job's case, it was Job was right and the wife was wrong. In this case, it's the woman that's right and the man is wrong. So you can't say that I'm one-sided or that I'm taking sides one way or the other. Now, finally, we come to the New Testament. That's a very solemn place, isn't it? You've read that passage in the book of the Acts, chapter 5, the first discipline in the New Testament. You've seen the first real disturbance from the inside. Alas, it hasn't been the last case. Now, here are two. And they sell their piece of ground or their property. So they must have been reasonably well off, as we will say. And they decide now, but this is the bit that's very solemn. They decide to give part to the apostles. Now, I wouldn't, maybe these men might not agree with me, as well, there are not too many here for, mostly do differ with me, but the way I see it is this now, that there'd been nothing wrong with them keeping part of it back. Hope you agreed with that. But they were pretending they were giving it all when they were only given part. Is that not the secret of their evil? And they're even like you nodding their heads at me, so I must be right after all. That is, I didn't think it was keeping back part of the price that was the trouble. But they were putting up the show that everything was just doing what everybody else was doing and getting credit for something that they weren't doing. Getting credit for something that was less costly than they were pretending it was. Now listen to this, dear soul. She says the wife was privy to it. Could you think of those two sitting down and talking it over? Now we've sold that. I suppose it was nowadays that they're looking maybe 30 or 40 thousand for it. Now I think we give 14 to the 15 to the Lord then.
We keep the other 15. You know, you might need it. There's a rainy day could come just for many a thing. And we could get, we could be doing with it. Yes. Well, says Ananias, I think that's the right idea. Yes, said his wife. That's just it. We'll just agree on that. Harmony, all right. He listened to it. Harmony, all right. But harmony in doing wrong. God pity us, dear souls. God pity us. We're everyone tested someday or other. There's hardly a home in the company. Now, you may think I don't live in dreamland. Hardly a home in the company. But someday or other, tests come. Now, would you, dear sister, remember this? Do what's right. Would you, dear brother, think of this? Do it with all your heart by the help of God. Do what's right. And then you will have no regrets, and God will be glorified.